Good afternoon, everyone. I hope everyone's having a fun day. Are you learning a lot? Are your brains full? A little bit, almost. You got about another hour we can fill up there? I am glad to say I'm not the person who's between you and happy hour, because there is another keynote session after this one. So I don't have that burden to bear. But welcome, thank you for coming. Today we're going to talk about big data on Azure, and we're going to talk through a real-world example. This is a system that I helped a customer build over, well, starting last October. And we went into May to get everything finished. Part of that was time constraints. So our agenda for the day, we've got roughly 55 minutes. Who am I? I'm going to talk about an organization within Microsoft called Premier Developer, because my boss insists I do that whenever I speak. I'm going to do an overview of the entire architecture, and then I'm going to talk in detail about the four major Cortana analytics components we used: DocumentDB, Stream Analytics, Data Factory, and HD Insight. And then hopefully there will be some time at the end for Q&A. If they kick us out of the room, which I don't think they will because this is the last session of the day in the room, but I'll stay as long as anyone wants to talk and have questions, whether you want to miss the keynote or not. So who am I? I'll do it in a big scary face on the screen. My name is Brian Raymer. I've been with Microsoft for a little over 8 years now. I've been working with SQL Server since 1993. I've been in IT since the mid-80s. And my transition from developer and coder to DBA data platform guy happened about 1990, 1991. So I've really been strongly focused on data platform ever since then. And like I said, and also, I think these decks are available after the workshop. So you've got my contact info if you want to email me or call me with questions. I'm with a group called Premier Developer. So it's Premier Services for Developers. And what we do is we are customer and field focused. It's a Premier Support kind of contract where you purchase some number of hours for use throughout the year. And we're all about reducing risks and costs, increasing your productivity, and being proactive with your development. So prior to joining Premier Developer, I was with Microsoft Consulting Services, and there's a percentage of engagements that were always, we built this big system, and one in particular comes to mind, they built a big system, invested thousands of hours and lots of money, and with three front-end servers and two database back-ends, they could support about 10 concurrent users. And they said, we really need this to scale to more than 10. So they had five consultants come in and start tearing apart every aspect of it. And of course, they didn't want to hear the answer, which was you need to modify the architecture in specific ways. There's some things you're doing that are just never going to perform very well. So that was, you know, it's a difficult message for us to deliver. It's a difficult message for the customer to hear. It's a very difficult message for the directors to take up to the VPs and the presidents. So with Premier Services for Developers, we come in proactively up front, and especially all the technologies you're hearing about today and tomorrow, odds are, well, I mean, no one has years of in-house experience in these tools. They're brand new. We've got experience in the categories. These tools are specific, you know, specific implementations vary, but the way Premier Developer works, you'll have a person who they're title is Application Development Manager, or ADM. They're like a development TAM. And they're committed to, depending on how many they have, they're committed to either one customer for a full year or several customers that have purchased smaller contracts for use throughout that year. But they tie themselves into your development lifecycle. They understand your goals and objectives. And they're generally deep in specific technology areas. In areas where they don't have personal depth, we've also got a consulting team, which is what I'm part of, that supports the ADMs. So when an ADM who doesn't have data platform expertise has, you know, my customer wants to talk about DocumentDB, they want to talk about HD Insight, they want to talk about SQL Server, when do you have time to come do that? So I'll come in and help build a POC, or I'll come in and teach a workshop and do this at the start of your project, the start of your development cycle, and then remain in contact throughout the duration of it. So the goal is really to improve the entire development experience and help you be successful with our platform, because that's what our shareholders like. So that was the sales pitch. Had to get that out of the way. Now everything else is going to be talking about this specific implementation. So the overall architecture, I know this is an ugly diagram. We built this collaborative, so the team that was working on this project, what this project does, big picture, this company builds a lot of equipment. They build equipment, they HVAC systems for commercial buildings and monitors and sensors that go in commercial buildings. So big picture, one portion of this company has contracts to maintain those systems and maintain those buildings. So we're streaming sensor data from tens of thousands of buildings around the world through Event Hub into the other technologies that we'll talk about. And this project is all about detecting faults, not waiting for someone to say, hey, it's really hot on floor 3 and it doesn't seem to be fit, you know, something's wrong, but detecting that in advance. And then there is a phase 2 that they're currently working on, which is going to add predictive analytics into the mix, but that's not part of today's discussion. So the team that was developing this was myself from Microsoft here in the US, a couple people in Australia, and another 3 or 4 people in India, in 2 different cities, one in Bangalore, and I forget where the other gentleman was. Maybe. So we built this collaboratively online, and this comes out of it's really just a picture tool, but it lets you add and remove layers. Right here I have every layer shown. So it's just, as we're discussing the problem and coming up with things, we're throwing boxes on here. So the yellowish boxes at the very top, those are configuration data and control data, and that was all implemented with DocumentDB. And I'll say it now and I'll say it again in a few minutes. We barely scratched the surface of what we could have done with DocumentDB, but for the flexibility they needed, it's a great fit. And so it's a simple use of DocumentDB, but it's perfect for this kind of scenario. So thousands of building sites around the world. Each building site has anywhere from 1 to, I think the biggest one is 24 buildings. And configuration data, what constitutes a fault for a specific building? That's different for every single site, and it can be different for buildings within the site. So I'm going too deep right now. This is a problem I have when I am presenting, is I talk through the next 3 slides before I actually get to the next 3 slides. So yellow boxes, DocumentDB, configuration data. The orange boxes are the near real-time path, stream analytics. The purple boxes, Data Factory and HD Insight. The green boxes on the left are Event Hub, which I'm not going to talk much about at all. We have a long-term storage box here that's also green, but that's blob storage. And then the off-white boxes on the bottom right are data stores for recognized faults. We're storing that chunk of data long-term, and some interface with the visualization tools. So that's the big picture. Then, so we got all these boxes up there. These are the things we need to do something with. Then we started drawing the lines on top of them. So the blue line is the near real-time. Event data comes in from the building sensors. We run it through stream analytics. We recognize a fault, pump it out to the visualization. We're also at the same time splitting that data stream, storing data in blob store. We have a batch process that comes through, looks through that batch data for faults, pumps it out to the visualization tool. You might ask, well, we've got the near real time detecting faults. Why do we have the batch process? Even if all of our systems worked perfectly with 100% uptime, 5 nines of availability, they never went down, buildings go offline. They're all over the world. There's any number of reasons a building could lose connectivity. So within the building, the sensors are accumulating data. Once they come back online, they send it all out. But that data now has a lag in it that we're not going to try to capture through stream analytics. So we have this batch process that we may have missed one fault, we may have missed 100 faults, we might not have missed any faults, we don't know until we go back through with the batch process and re-examine the data that never went through stream analytics because it came in late. So what they wanted, visualization-wise, we're doing all this work on the back end. They wanted a graph that showed sensor readings and then highlight. So across the bottom here is time. Sensor readings on a blended scale. So the vertical yellow bars, we want to highlight that from this time to this time, there was a fault. It might be because sensor number one was too high up there. It might be because sensor number seven down here dipped low. Regardless of what causes the fault, when there is a fault, we want to show previous data, the fault time period, and some follow-on data. So this was the goal, and then once they have this visualization, the customer gets emailed a copy of the picture and a link to the live data so they can go into the visualization tool and look at it. The internal building manager also gets sent the email and the link. Alerts go to whoever needs alerts. It's, we had a fault, it was this kind of fault. Here's what it looks like, now someone go fix it. And like I said, the phase two they're currently working on is adding a predictive mechanism in here. There hasn't been a fault yet, but we think there's gonna be one in the next week with data to support that. So this is what we're trying to build. This is what we did build. So first off, DocumentDB. I mentioned we used it for configuration and reference data. So we have various documents that have site configuration and then building configuration elements within them. A high sensor reading, and especially when you talk about different regions of the world, what constitutes a high temperature reading for a sensor in Scotland might be considered a nice cool day in some place closer to the equator. So those kinds of, just not that the sensor has a high or low reading in my opinion, but they're focused regionally. Now, prior to this project, this configuration data, it already existed, but they were managing it with a library of Excel spreadsheets where the site and building specialists would build the spreadsheet of this is what constitutes a fault for building A and building B and building C on my site. Those are kind of hard to read. People tend to add columns or move things around or enter data in the wrong place every once in a while. I don't know if you've experienced this yourselves. Anyone? No, your Excels are all perfect? Awesome, good for you. So this is a little more reliable. It's programmatic control. The other big thing we did with DocumentDB is configuration data for our system itself. So we built a .NET app to manage all these different components through the various APIs. So when we're bringing a new site into the system, we get the site configuration documents, load them in the DocumentDB, and then based on those, and based on the application configuration documents, we start provisioning blob storage. We start provisioning, the event hubs were set up for us, but we provision the stream jobs that are gonna connect to those event hubs. We provision the fault data store, so for when we recognize faults, we know where we're gonna put things. We provision the pig scripts. I'll talk about that a little bit more when we're talking about HD Insight. We had templates for our pig scripts with batches that were customized. Those code blocks are stored as data in DocumentDB, and then at provisioning time, we're taking that data out of DocumentDB, plugging it into the script file, and putting that script out in storage so that HD Insight can grab it and run it with the correct parameters for that building. So, and for this presentation, I've had to genericize things in certain areas. So just a simple configuration document, CO2 sensor. Every component in our system is keyed by GUIDs. We needed the uniqueness. Having something that comes up with integers and some kind of sequence number gets really annoying really fast. GUIDs are easy, they're hard to read, but we don't really care because it's all internal. So, and then we had various key values and configuration values. These would be things like a low level, CO2 low level, CO2 high level, and then the values of what those literal values coming out of the sensor are. So again, the document DB part wasn't super exciting. It can do a lot more, but we didn't need it to, so we got what we needed out of it. Stream analytics. So the average building has, I believe it was 550 or 600 sensors between fan speed, temperature, CO2, carbon monoxide, whether a shutter is open or closed. So throughout the building, automatic vent shutters, very popular. Really give the building manager much more detailed control over where the air is flowing, so it lets a lot of automation occur. Pardon me, we don't want to have someone having to run around. It's like, no, open this one a little bit more, and they'll go close the ones in the west wing. We automate that. It's just a standard practice now. But then also sensors tell you, is that vent fully closed? Is that vent fully open? Is it somewhere in between? So we're reading all those. So lots of sensors per building, buildings per site, and these sensors report data every second. So even with very small data packages, the volume builds pretty quickly. So plug that into Event Hub. Stream Analytics is then going to pull that point data. There were several steps in the flow, but this is one. It's another CO2 sensor reading. So our actual sensor reading coming through, we wanted to see if we're going to detect a fault or not. And this is detecting low concentrations. So if CO2 gets too low, that's a problem. If CO2 gets too high, that's a problem. We had multiple stream analytics jobs for every building site, but depending on the definition of what's a fault for a specific building site, we'd have different values in here. And also, just because a sensor is high or low for one reading, that's not necessarily a fault. It has to be some number of consecutive readings before it's considered a fault. And I'm going to say every case, there may be one or two exceptions, but pretty much it's not just that a sensor spiked. Okay, a sensor spiked, so what? It went right back down, we don't care, move on. It got high and stayed high. After some specific duration, that's then a problem that has to be addressed. So we're summarizing when the concentration's low, getting a max duration. The AFD match ID is how we're comparing it to other. So AFD, you'll see us throughout the examples, automated fault detection. So that's the ID so we can link the matches to each other when we see multiple matches. And then start and end times. And for this particular reading, for this particular building, we're using a sliding window. That's a 3-minute group. So, and you've probably heard already today, with stream analytics, you've got three different kinds of windows: sliding, hopping, and tumbling. So for this particular problem that we're trying to solve, sliding's really the only one. It's an obvious, you have to have a sliding window so that you can see when you went across your fault duration to actually declare a fault from high or low sensor readings. If you did a tumbling window or a hopping window, it might start high in one window, but not be high long enough, and then you're in the next window, and you're not comparing the previous one. So sliding's obvious. And I think in most situations, the window to choose is pretty obvious based on the technical requirements or the business requirement. But be aware that you have those options. So in this one, I can't really show thousands of lines of code. So I'm kind of trying to talk through it. This is stage one of fault detection. So it's like a level one. This sensor's out of reading. That's a level one symptom. A lot of the rules for what constitutes a fault are multiple sensors out of bounds at the same time. So with our stream analytics jobs, we're detecting individual sensors out of bounds, feeding those into the next job that's looking for combinations of sensors out of range. Okay, so Azure Data Factory and HD Insight. Data Factory, this is all managing our batch execution. So we've got all those events adding up quite rapidly, going into blob storage. The automated job with Data Factory, we're running 6-hour windows on a 6-hour lag. So we'd run the batch process, and we'd run the same algorithm that we used in stream analytics. I mean, the faults we're detecting are the same faults. But the way we detect them, it's different technology, so there's some different implementations. So that 6-hour window, so if we're running at noon, we're looking at midnight to 6 a.m. data. When we run at 6 p.m., we're looking at 6 a.m. to noon data. It is a hopping window, but within the batch we're looking at, we also have the data from the previous run that we're referencing, so we'll see faults that spanned multiple windows. So the basics of Data Factory and the four main components: linked services, data sets, pipelines, and activities. So a linked service is a thing that you're pulling data from or pushing data to, or a thing that you're using in the processing of the data. So my source is blob storage. I create a linked service that says, this storage account with this key, this is my source. It could also be a linked service that, at the other end, we're pushing stuff, the detected faults also out to blob storage. So that's another linked service, this blob, this container, that's our linked service destination. Our HD Insight clusters are a linked service inside Data Factory, and I'll show you the JSON for one of those in a few minutes. We used on-demand HD Insight clusters because since we're running every 6 hours and the runtime was 40 to 50 minutes, we don't want to have an HD Insight cluster sitting there unused for 5 hours. I mean, they're cheap compared to on-premise, but still, why spend 6 times more than we have to? So we'd use the on-demand cluster. It puts a 15-minute lag in our job because at the start of the job, you create the cluster. That takes 15 minutes to get all the nodes provisioned and spun up. But with a multi-step job, we're not creating a brand new cluster for each step. We have the one cluster that everyone's sharing. At least we did one cluster per site. So different sites would come through different event hubs and they'd have their own clusters built. But for that site, every step is sharing that same cluster. And as long as something's using that cluster, it's there. As soon as no one's using that cluster anymore, with a little bit of lag that you can control, that cluster's deprovisioned, you stop paying for it. So data sets, once we've created a linked server, a linked service, you define a data set on that linked service. So if your linked service happened to be an on-premise SQL server, the linked service knows how to connect to SQL Server. Your data set says, within SQL Server, I want this table or this view. So it's the more detailed connection. Pipeline is the flow between two data sets. So I've got a linked service and a data set that I'm using as a source. I have a linked service and a data set that I'm using as a sink. In between them, I define a pipeline. And within that pipeline, I have activities. In this project, most of our pipelines had one activity only. We were doing one thing, moving from A to B with a transformation. You can have multiple activities per pipeline, so you can do multiple step jobs. You can do multiple transforms. And then again, those activities are, am I just doing a simple copy? Am I running a pig script? Am I running a Hive query? You can plug in your own .NET code. You can do a lot of things within activities, and it's an expanding list of what's capable. There are probably more things capable this week than there were 4 weeks ago. the teams are building these out pretty quickly, so it's very flexible. So that, generically, is Data Factory. Specifically, this is some of the definition JSON for a couple of data sets. And the reason I picked this as an example is because of how the data is partitioned in this project. The events are coming in continuously. We're having Event Hub dump them to blob storage every hour. So we're getting these 1 hour snapshots or partitions of the data. And within blob storage, it's a separate folder structure for year, month, day, hour. We want to run our batches in 6 hours. So with that kind of mismatch between the windows, it's not really a big deal with Data Factory. So in the top half, this is our incoming data. And you see the availability, frequency, hours, unit one. I can specify any number from 0 to 24 in the frequency. Also, in the policy section, so I specified external data because it's coming from outside of a data source that Data Factory controls. It's the source. So I tell Data Factory that it's external. And initially there was some lag between, you know, Event Hub, we're saying every hour. If I want to run against the 11 a.m. to noon data, it wasn't completely within blob store until it was about 7 minutes after the hour. So when we're doing development and testing, I'm like, okay, so it's noon, run the data. Let's go. I'd miss a lot of things. You know, that's kind of bad. So I put in a little bit of lag, just set the data delay. Well, I set it to 6 hours. Because that's part of where we said, well, we can't really run the immediate 6 hours that we think just came in. And also, if a building's offline, we're not getting that data anyway. Push it back to a 6 hour delay. And then retry and timeout feeds. So in my destination data, frequency, hour, availability, 6. When I build the pipeline between the source and destination, Data Factory goes, okay, every hour, every 6 hours, I'm just going to let this accumulate for 6 hours, grab all 6 of those chunks, and run it through the pipeline. Beyond specifying the availability, I didn't have to do anything to tell it. I didn't have to try to programmatically say, OK, get the folder structures from 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 a.m. as 6 separate inputs and feed that in. Data Factory took care of that for me. So that was a very handy feature. Because initially I thought I had to do some of that work myself in code, and that was going to get annoying. What's next? Okay. So this is the document that is building the pipeline from source to destination, one of the pipelines. And it's running pig scripts on an HD Insight cluster. So the description, any name you want. In the activity section, type HD Insight pig. That's what tells Data Factory I need an HD Insight linked service. And on that HD Insight service, I'm going to run pig scripts. Script path. So my pig scripts actually live on a storage account out in Azure in blob storage. So I tell it within the container, here's the path to my pig scripts. Here's the script I actually want you to run. We had some, you know, handmade version control, version 1.2, data conditioning in Azure pig, .pig. Script link service, that's the name of the storage account that those pig scripts are in. The define section, there are actually about 37 parameters going into this pig script. I redacted those because I wouldn't fit on the slide and because some of it might be a little bit proprietary. But so those 37 parameters, when we're building this JSON document to define this pipeline, That's the part that was pulled from the application configuration and the building configuration JSON documents in DocumentDB. So that would sub in the correct values for the parameters based on this building. And so now that they're in the pipeline as parameters, those parameters get passed into PIG. Inside the PIG scripts, and I'll show you one of those in a second, there are placeholders for those parameters. So the code that's stored in DocumentDB gets passed into the Data Factory pipeline when that's defined, and then at runtime passed into PIG, plugged into the right place, and the PIG script executes and detects faults, which is what we all want. Inputs and outputs, these were also built dynamically at definition time. So when this document was created, and that just, like I said, so when I created the defined the linked services and data stores, this is where I said, so the input, I'm only giving it one folder. That's actually, that's a container name on a storage account. And the GUID is the building site identifier. I'm only telling it one place. Data Factory is saying, at that one place, I'm getting the previous six hours. Data Factory is doing that lifting for me. And then the one destination, I'm saying put it in result data. Within the result data, it'll build the folder structure, year, month, day, an hour. And those hours will increment by six because this is running every 6 hours. And it was told that was a 6 hour destination. So again, Data Factory is doing that for me. And then some timeout and delay parameters to keep things running in sync. I also want to show you, this is the JSON for within Data Factory, how I define an HD Insight on-demand cluster. So I just have to tell it that the type is HD Insight on-demand. Cluster size, how many nodes do I want? How many worker nodes? The head node doesn't count. That'll just show up on its own. You don't care about that. Do I want one worker node? Do I want 32 worker nodes? Do I want 64 worker nodes? No matter how many worker nodes I specify here, it takes about 15 minutes to build them all because they all build in parallel. So if you want one, 15 minutes. If you want 64, 15 minutes. The difference you'll see is in how long it takes your job to execute. So more nodes, costs more, runs faster. The net cost comes out pretty close to even for most workloads. But what's Microsoft famous for saying? This is what you should see. Test it with your data and your system to be sure. And then if I had specific parameters for all the other applications that can run on HD Insight, I could specify them here. Left and blank, I put the placeholders in here, you see. If you're using HBase, if you're using Hive, if you're using Uzi, Spark, Storm, Yarn, if you're doing something custom with those, you can include those parameters here, and the cluster will be built with those parameters every time you spin it up. And right in the middle there, time to live, set at 30 minutes. That is actually time until it gets killed. So if no one's been using this cluster for 30 minutes, it gets deprovisioned, it gets decommissioned. I should probably turn that down to about 10 minutes, but I pulled these scripts from when we were in the proof of concept phase and the development phase. So I think they did lower them in production, but so spin it up when I need it, run all my jobs, get rid of it when I'm done, don't pay any extra. So, a little deeper on HD Insight. I just told you how we're using Data Factory to control it. We're using it for batch fault detection. And I already talked through why we need this. So buildings go offline, we might miss data. It's almost guaranteed, I mean, it's not almost guaranteed, it's guaranteed that Stream Analytics will not get all of the data it needs to detect 100% of the faults. There will be hiccups, there will be offline buildings. We have to have a batch process. Well, for our scenario, for our requirements, we have to have a batch process. Other scenarios, it's like, well, you know, if we miss one, so what? If we're getting 9 out of 10, we're fine. You know, it depends on the business requirements. That's more of a question for the business side of things. Does it matter if we miss a fault? For us, yes. Depending on what we're capturing, you know, if we're capturing Twitter sentiments. We didn't get the sentiment from 10:30 to 11 yesterday. Do we care? Did the sentiment change during that half hour? It's like everyone was really happy, but that half hour we're afraid it might have been bad. Probably don't care so much. So for that scenario, do you need a batch process to capture everything? Probably not. For other scenarios, we definitely needed one. So this is the first part of one of the scripts. So everything, and I don't know, it's probably a variety of levels of familiarity with Pig. Everything with a dollar sign is a variable. If you're running Pig scripts from a Hadoop or HD Insight console, how you pass variables in is different from the way Data Factory does it. So what Data Factory does is, in my pipeline definition, I had those 37 parameters. Data Factory, since it's pulling the script from blob storage and then passing it to the HD Insight cluster that it built, while it's passing that script, it does physical replacement of the variables with the parameter that I specified in the pipeline page. Let me, even though I only have one fake one in there, let me jump back to that real quick. So, generic params, and then the phrase generic parameters. If there was a dollar generic params value in here, prior to execution, when Data Factory is passing that in, it's going to substitute the words generic parameters in that space in the script. So that's very different, and that caused me some headaches until I talked to the Data Factory team, and they said, no, we do parameters different. It's like this. Okay, that would have been good to know yesterday. So this part of the script sets some variables, registers some jar files that we need later, and loads the point data into a pig variable. So this point data raw equal load, dollar if result data path, dollar job ID, et cetera. That's the source. That's pulling the point data in. And now within pig, it's a big table in point data raw that we can use in the rest of our script. So this is where I mentioned that as this job is running, so the way Data Factory runs, it's a tumbling window. There's no such thing, you can't really do a sliding window. We're also loading up here in fault data aggregate, potential fault data from the previous run. So we stored that in blob storage also. So we got the midnight to 6 a.m. potential fault data stored. We're now loading that into this script along with the current 6 hours of data so we can detect faults that span that tumbling window break. Can't do that in stream analytics with a tumbling window. That's why you had a sliding window, but it's hard. This is how you program around a sliding window with HD Insight and Pig. And then this big fault in progress output joins the data together, applies the fault detection rules. And in here, this whole middle section that generates concat, et cetera, that was all a parameter that was subbed in by Data Factory. So I wanted to show you what it looks like after Data Factory's done the sub. That was just a dollar fault detection rule placeholder variable parameter. So AFD subbed that in. And then we've detected whatever we've detected. We store it also in blob storage. So that's the store statement down here at the bottom. So now it's time for Q&A, and I will start. What would I have done differently if I had to do this all again today? Number one thing, we did a lot of development work around managing our storage accounts. 500 gig per account. Events keep coming in. They fill up, so separate storage accounts for each site. Detecting when a storage account is getting close to full, we need another one to start redirecting our streams there. We built a lot of management around that. If I was doing this today, I would be in the data lake team's ear. My customer needs to be in the private preview. We need a data lake. We want one place to put all of our data and not have to worry about that. That's a big one. Visualization-wise, you heard I was talking about the visualization tool. They weren't able to use a Microsoft tool for that. Power BI APIs hadn't yet been published. And with 1,000 building sites, you know, we don't want to have to hire someone to go to each site's Power BI account and build visualizations or apply visualization templates manually to all of those. That's, you know, that too much manual work. They were talking about migrating to Power BI when it has the capabilities they needed. Whether they follow through on that or not, I'll encourage them to, but we'll see. So those are two of the big things that I would do differently today than 10 months ago. What kind of questions do you guys have? Okay, so the question is, how do they build the data visualizations? They use Tableau. I think you probably knew that answer already.
What was your project duration?
Overall, it was about 5 months, but that was not, no one on the project was 100% committed for those 5 months. So it was probably about 150 hours of my time and, more than that of the customer's resources times, but I don't know how much more. Yes, sir.
Did you monitor and diagnose the full solution because you have a lot of different components? So how do you make sure that everything keeps running and get alerts for that?
So the question is, how do we monitor the solution to make sure everything's running? At the time it was deployed, it was a separate alerts for each product. So there are the monitoring APIs, and we built some of that into the application that runs things. But it was a very basic monitoring, just more of a, it's alive or it's not alive. Yes, sir?
Did you keep like a separate development environment in production, or how did you sync those?
So the question is, how do we separate development and production environments? And I don't know what they're doing right now. At the time I was involved, we didn't, because we were at that, you know, that greenfield, first out the gate, we can do what we want and get away with it because we're not stepping on anyone else's toes. Yes, sir. So the question is, with Data Factory, do we have one Data Factory for everyone or separate Data Factories for client? So they chose separate Data Factory per client, and this is part of what was built in the management application. Some of their clients are very touchy about their data mixing, even though it's sensor reading data from their buildings. To me, that, maybe someone at the CIA can use that to somehow come up with a way to sneak into the building and get something they need. I can't. But, you know, people care about their data, so, and this was a business-driven decision. It was not a capacity decision. They have a separate data factory, separate event hubs, separate everything for each client. Go ahead. Okay.
So can you actually like script like using how PowerShell script is script like each client data factory and hub like automatically like if it's similar?
Okay, so the question is, do we use PowerShell or something to script out each client? The answer is yes. We didn't use PowerShell. We used the .NET APIs. And so the management application that was built in C# does that. And then DocumentDB really drives what happens. So when a new building, and they already had over 1,000 sites that were being monitored with older tools. When they would bring a site into this system, they would convert the Excel sheets with the site definitions into DocumentDB, place that in DocumentDB, and then the application would pull that information from DocumentDB and generate all the JSONs we need for Data Factory, all the jobs we need for Stream Analytics, it would provision the storage accounts we need for pulling from Event Hub and for saving our fault data. So it was all API driven. The question is, do you need some kind of expertise to do that? You need some good .NET developers. The APIs are relatively straightforward. But yeah, you need someone who knows .NET and either who also knows the APIs for all these Azure tools or working with someone. And that was my role with them for that. Like, I did the Data Factory portions. I did the HD Insight portions. One of their guys wrote the pig scripts for HD Insight. And then with the application that manages everything, I helped them with the API calls and through all that.
Can you use the API to systematically generate the Data Factory and everything?
Yes. Yeah, so the application would generate the JSON documents that Data Factory needs and then use API calls to ingest those documents into Data Factory to create the linked services, to create the data sets, create the pipelines. Yes, sir. I'm sorry, I can't quite hear you.
In terms of competitive, an idea about performance between HBase, DocumentDB, and MongoDB?
Okay, so the question is, in terms of performance, comparison between HBase, DocumentDB, and MongoDB, and I'm sure there is, but I don't know, sorry. Yes, sir?
So do you have any demo project so that we can try it out?
Is there a
demo on the bug so that we can use your
Oh, okay. So the question is there a demo of this project that you can try out and modify for yourselves? Not at this time. I'd say it's unlikely.
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 Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, ma'am. Yes. So the question is, why did they build this system? Was it to save money, save time, or have higher performance? It was primarily money and performance. So the existing systems were site-specific, and it was an application on each site. But if the building manager, and it was the building manager's computer. So if something happened overnight, it might be connected and send them an email or send her an email, it might not. But it was very much a reactive system, and there was, you know, if something happens over the weekend, no one knows until Monday morning. So time-wise, having the near real time was a big business driver, and it was something that this customer had promised to their customers, is more closer to near real time fault detection. So instead of being up to 2 or 3 days, you know, minutes or 5 minutes, that was a big driver. And then that they're saving money overall is just another wonderful benefit. Thank you all for coming. Thank you guys for staying.